Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I am your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I am excited about our show today. I have Justin Kerr with us. He is a self-described efficiency monster and is the author of the Rogue Corporate Playbooks, How to Write an Email and How to Be a Boss. He is also the mouthpiece of the Mr. Corpo podcast and has been the youngest senior executive at some of the world's biggest apparel companies, Gap, Old Navy, Levi's, just to name a few, running billion-dollar businesses while finding time to write 14 books, tour the country with his rock band, and keep 100,000 bees on his roof. He is currently president of Imprint Projects in New York City. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you, Belinda. So excited to be here. That was a great introduction.
It sure was. It's got my curiosity peaked, that's for sure. We're going to have to dig into this one. So why don't we start out, though, just by letting our listeners get to know you a bit more, fill in a little bit of the gaps of your bio, and tell us a little bit more about your journey.
Yeah, well, I think you hit a lot of the high points as it covers my resume and what I've done in the working world. I basically grew up in corporate America, running up the flagpole, having a great time. But I think the things that would be most interesting for your listeners to know about me is I've never worked past 5 p.m. a single day in my life, and I've never checked email after work or on the weekends. And for me, that really came from a place of wanting to find a separation from my work and everything else I wanted to do with my life. And that's how I found my work-life balance. So I know it's probably pretty controversial, but that's kind of my approach to, you know, finding my happy place is really kind of separating the two. And that was my obsession and reason for writing the books, was to help other people be so good at their job, so efficient that they can spend more time doing whatever it is they want. And that what that is up to them.
That is great. So how has the business today then shaped your lifestyle?
Oh my goodness. Yes. So, I mean, my obsession is I get up to work as early as possible. So I get into the office at around 7 a.m. And the reason I do that is because no one's ever invited me to hang out with them early in the morning, but I always get a lot of invites after work. So my day-to-day work and my job now at a small creative agency is the same as when I was at a big corporation. Get to work early, send good emails, and then leave early and get on with the rest of your life.
That's awesome. And that's a, it is so true. And I was just reading, I've read several books on this, but they say that the most successful people are the ones that do the most early in the morning.
It's the only time you have for yourself. And, you know, I know there's people out there that aren't morning people. It doesn't even mean that I'm necessarily a morning person. I really feel that it's a fact of the working world that if you need time to get things done, especially as you become more of a leader, you have more people that need your time and you spend all your time in meetings, the only guaranteed time in your day is early in the morning. So whether you like it or not, I'm here to tell you, I think that that's the truth.
Okay. Well, before we jump into some of our technical questions, I just have to get some of my curiosity out, which I'm guessing some of our listeners have too. So you were in a rock band. That's fun. And what did you do in your rock band?
So yes, it sounds cool to say you're in a rock band until I follow it up and say, I played tambourine in the rock band. Now, what I would tell you, see, that laugh is exactly what I get, Belinda. It's so funny. But I will let you know, the San Francisco Chronicle wrote a review of our show and they called me the Mick Jagger of the tambourine. And
wow.
I thought, wow, if even though the tambourine is lame and laughable, if I'm the Mick Jagger of it, then I've really done something. But my favorite fact about being in the band is my wife is the lead singer and she's toured around the world in band. So she's all the talent and I'm just along for the ride. And it's been great. I've got to travel all over the country. And, you know, even while I worked at Gap and Old Navy and all these big companies, I was able to take 1 week breaks or actually a 3 week break to tour around the country. So I've got all the ins and outs on how to ask for vacations and times off. So I've figured out all those little pieces of corporate America.
That's awesome. And I just laugh because I don't know what I was expecting in that.
Not tambourine, I'm sure.
I wasn't expecting the tambourine, but that's awesome. And to be a Mick Jagger of a tambourine, well, that's pretty darn good. So tell me about the 100,000 bees on your roof right now.
I know. That's probably the most interesting thing about me that I get to talk about. But, you know, I took beekeeping because I was at work. I had been 11 years at Gap Inc. and I felt like I was getting a little stale. I wasn't learning new things. I was in a routine. And so I said, I got to do something new to break out of it. And I found out you could take a beekeeping class for 2 hours. And at the end of the class, they hand you 5,000 bees in a shoebox. I put them in my PT Cruiser and I drove home. And all of a sudden, I'm a beekeeper. And those 5,000 bees grew to become 100,000 bees. And I harvest the honey. I sell it at Williams-Sonoma. And it's just a great way to learn something new. And that's something that's a recurring theme throughout my life, is just making sure I've got things outside of work that keep me interested and give me a balance so that I don't hold on to the day-to-day of every email and meeting too tightly. I've got to have those outside interests.
That's great. It's a good balance for sure. So what do you think are a couple of your greatest skill sets that have really helped you to be successful in, it sounds like, in multiple businesses?
Yeah, I would say I'm a very practical person. And so I would say what has really helped me the most is I write really good emails and I use a lot of bullet points. So that's it. It's as simple as that. Because one of the things I like to point out to people is they don't work late because they love what they do. They work late because they suck at writing emails. And what I mean by that is, think of the thousands upon thousands of emails that you write every week, but you never stop to think, am I even doing it right? And is there anything I could do better to get my responses quicker or to move faster? Because there's these invisible hours of the day where you send out an email because you need something from someone, and then you're literally sitting there waiting for them to reply to you before you can finish your job. And those are invisible lost hours in a workday, and they add up really quickly. And if I can write an email that is so clear and easy to read that you're going to reply right away in 10 minutes or 30 minutes, and meanwhile, the person next to me wrote a really sloppy email that's not well organized, and they have to wait 3 hours because you don't want to answer their messy email, that's the difference between me getting out and getting to do things outside of work or not. So when people say, how have you done all these things? I literally say, write good emails and always use bullet points. That's it. That's the beginning and end of my secret to success.
Wow, that's great. Any just short little tips? I mean, I see that you have a whole book on this, so I'm sure people should go out and get your book on how to write an email after that, right?
I mean, Belinda, you can't imagine the pressure on me because I'm literally the guy who wrote the book on how to write an email. The book is called How to Write an Email. So every email I write, I feel like I'm being judged. But yeah, the book points out a bunch of tips and tricks. And of course, bullet points is one of them. Another one that people overlook, I'll just share quickly, is make sure that there's white space in your email. You've got to give it breathing room. And so big blocks of text are your enemy because they're intimidating and it's overwhelming. And that's when people save your email for later or don't reply and hope it goes away. And so I always try and encourage people to hit return twice, have big breaks between their points, even between bullet points, create white space, because when you open that email, it's less intimidating. It's easier to see each point that you're trying to make. So those are just a couple things off the top of my head that I found to good effect.
That's good. That's funny. I just had this discussion with my 14-year-old a couple of days ago. She had written an essay and then something that she had to write for acting. And I said, we got to put some space in here. This just looks like too long for me to read, too much. It doesn't make me want to read it. So let's put some space in here.
Belinda,
and that's what we did.
Sorry to cut you off. You're hitting on the exact point, which is actually we're all raised through school to write these essays, and it's like introduction paragraph, supporting evidence, and then conclusion. But when it comes to the work world and writing an email, we don't have time for all of that. And let alone that, think about how most people read emails now. It's actually on the tiny screens on their iPhones. And think about what a block of text looks like. When you're scrolling through that, it looks like an endless, you know, Ulysses, the next great novel. And you're just like, okay, I can't deal with this. So everything we've been taught for 15 years of school kind of goes out the window when you get to the working world. It's almost not fair.
Right. Absolutely. That's an outstanding point. And that's what she was kind of dealing with, because it wasn't really an essay. She had to just write some points of why she wanted to audition for this role. And I thought, oh my gosh, you wouldn't read that, you know, and I would want her to get the role. Like, part of getting the role is to even get the audition. And she has to write a short, you know, explanation of why she wants the audition. And so it was interesting, but that was my exact advice to her. So I'm so glad.
That's great. Oh, it's always good when you find someone that agrees with you. But I think you're right, because my philosophy when I write an email or when I communicate with anyone is, make it easy for the other person to say yes. That's your job in communicating, whether it's in the workplace or anything else that you're asking for someone. And that means taking the time to organize your information, make it digestible. And like you said, get to some small, short, sharp points that someone can read and be like, okay, great. She's going to be great. Let's put her in this production.
Right.
Rather than asking someone to be like, please invest 30 minutes of your time reading my long form essay and hopefully you'll come out of it inspired. There's no way.
Right. So tell us about something meaningful or something that is one of your great accomplishments.
You know, it's such an interesting question. I really never talk about work outside of work. So when you ask that question, I'm thinking of, oh, I wrote this book that I'm really excited about, or, oh, I helped my brother do something. But I think in the last year, when I became president of Imprint Projects, and it was the first time I was finally in charge of everything, I really started to take pride in trying to help everybody on this team succeed and run a successful business, because I felt the weight and the pressure of every pay cycle, feeling like it was my signature on their paychecks that they were going to take home and take to their family. So I don't know if this answers your question, but what am I most proud of is, in this last year, in the moment of where I was the final decision maker and the weight of the world rested on my shoulders, I was able to deliver, and every 2 weeks, give them their paychecks. It sounds small. I don't know if it sounds small or big. I can't decide, but that's the thing I was most proud of. I took a real personal pride in feeling like I was helping people do that. And then, of course, the other element is when you give someone a promotion or a raise and you feel like, I'm giving you a leg up, you're up to that next level in your life, and keep going, go beyond me, and all of those things. So that's kind of how I approach my work and how I find the things that I'm really excited about.
That's great. Well, tell us then about maybe a challenge or an obstacle that you faced and then how you worked through that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm you've definitely catching me in a moment of where I'm in my position now. And one of the challenges that I have is I have to check my sense of humor at the door before I walk in. And I don't know if a lot of people have this problem or not, but, you know, I came from a culture with a bunch of brothers and we used to tease each other and we would say, you know, fun things, and we were trying to be playful and make fun of each other a little bit. And I find in the workplace that that really doesn't work at all. Especially if you've got a title next to your name, like director or vice president, let alone president, where if I say to someone, oh, you know, that's a funny hat, I think I'm being funny. But when the president says that, then everyone says, why did the president say that? You know, that it, your words carry a different weight when you're in the workplace, I guess would be my summary. And so I'm very conscientious of that. Over the last 18 years, I've really learned a lot of lessons the hard way. This is not to say woe is me. It's more like a growing up, which was, that's a real challenge when you understand the impact you have on the people around you. And you can't indulge in every whim or thought that you have or what you might do if you're lazy on the couch. You've got to think, I'm here with other people. I'm here with other human beings. How do I want to treat them? How do I want to show up for them? And what do they need from me? I think being someone who's always been a leader, sometimes it's easy to just focus on yourself, but you really are transcendent when you can think of everybody else first. And so that's probably the thing I struggle with and constantly remind myself to kind of take a deep breath before I walk in, and then show up for everyone in the right way.
I think that that's an outstanding point, and this is such a, it's such a fine line, because I have always been one to say, you know, you need to, if you don't like something about your personality, change it, work on it. You know, just because I don't buy into this, well, that's just the way that I am, you know,
right.
That's just, that's the way I'm wired. You know,
right.
You're wired to be rude to people. You're wired to make people feel bad. You're wired to, make jokes at people's expense. I mean, so, and it goes on, right? And I think, no, you're really not. Like, when I teach people that you've got to have passion and enthusiasm, and you've got to translate that passion about your product or your service to
That's
others
right.
if you really want to attract them. And they're like, well, I'm just not a really, like, outgoing personality. So it's like, well, then I guess you better learn to be one. Like,
That's right. And it's just excuses, Belinda.
I know.
Ultimately, it's saying, I don't want to make the effort it takes to try and do what you're asking me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting is there has been in the, especially in the last 3 years, and this whole be you movement, you know, it's like, be proud of who you are, mm-hmm. be authentic.
Yes.
I know I'm going to sound really bad, anybody listening to this show right now, but I am so tired of people using that word out of context.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, Belinda, because the intention is, you know, let's appreciate everyone around us and all of our differences and all of those different pieces. But at the same time, what it's not intended to say, and I at least I don't understand it to be, is it doesn't mean you be you. And if you're lazy, just be lazy and we have to accept you for being lazy. Or if you're rude, just keep being rude. It just means let's embrace our differences, but let's also respect each other enough to show up in the right way, you know? So it's ripe for someone that wants to mistreat that idea or effort.
Absolutely it is. And so that's been my observation in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's a changing world. It's changing really quickly. A lot of great things. And it takes a lot of energy to kind of, like, you know, keep growing and staying engaged and keeping up with everybody, I would say.
Yep. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
Yes, this was such a great question, because I love your podcast. I love the prompt that it says. And you know, my feeling working from my happy place for me, because I'm someone who likes to have things very organized and everything in their place, for me, working from my happy place is staying on top of things so that I never feel behind. That means getting into work early. If I go into work 30 minutes later than I usually do, my whole day is blown, because I just don't feel on top of things. So that's a very small thing. But then the second thing for me is I walk around. I have a lot of friends who are artists or musicians, and I constantly wonder, am I a sellout? You know, should I be – I'm working for, you know, these corporations and all these things. But I've negotiated with myself that working from my happy place means as long as I'm done by 5 o'clock, I'm happy. I'll give the company anything they want during the work hours, but after 5 o'clock, I get to do whatever I want. And so it's interesting, because that gives me a satisfaction at work, which it allows me to work hard, do whatever I want, let go of my guilt of working for a big corporation versus being an artist or doing things on my own. And then it also liberates me, because it gives me a deadline at 5 o'clock to then go do all the other things I want to do with my life. So it kind of satisfies my work aspect and my out of work aspect. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I think that so many people, when they have a hard time with this question, or they find it really an interesting question, or this was my hardest question to answer. And I think it's because we get confused in, well, happiness, a lot of people define it. There's about 4 different ways, if I were to be honest. People either define it as, you know, flexibility and I get to set my own time or do what I want. Then there's others that I can work wherever I want. And that makes me, which kind of goes with the flexibility, but it's usually about location. Then there's the other one that is, I'm happiest when I'm serving others and I'm making a difference in somebody else's life.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a last one where I love what I do so much it doesn't feel like work. Those are my 4 common answers.
Right.
But I think this myth that is sort of out there, and you answer the next question, which we're going to get to, but is that working from my happy place and to have that flexibility or to have any of those things that I think are important is that I have to be doing something on my own. Like, you can't really be happy if you're working for somebody else. And I do really think that that's not true, because there are plenty of people, and I try to have people on the show that just aren't like, well, I run my own business, or I do this, that, or the other thing. And it is interesting, though. So I love your answer, actually. I think it's really awesome. And it really ties into our next question, which is, what advice would you give to others wanting to be entrepreneurs?
Yeah, you know, so I think you're hitting on the point, because it's not just like entrepreneurs, like, oh, you can only be happy when you work for yourself. But it's also, you know, one of the things that I find for entrepreneurs is create the space while you have the security of your job to start exploring what you might want to do. Because I find a lot of entrepreneurs, it's all or nothing. They feel like, okay, I've got to quit this job in a blaze of glory and go start the other job. But the truth is, I've actually quit Levi's like that. And there's a long period after you quit where it takes to ramp up, to do research, to figure out your business plan, to figure out what's going to work and what doesn't. And I think it's really useful to make sure that while you have a job, while you have the income, while you have some stability, that's the time to start looking around and see what else is out there in the world and start testing the waters a little bit. So that would be the thing when people come to me with business ideas. It's not an all or nothing situation. Carve out the time that you need to start exploring that. Now, if you say to me, well, I'm so busy at my work, I don't have time to think about it, I have to quit, my answer to you would be, hey, write some good emails, get an hour back in your day, and use that hour to start thinking about your entrepreneurial ideas. So I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that's kind of in my experience what I've kind of shared with friends or colleagues or people I've worked with.
I think those are some great points. I think there's lots of different, you know, lots of different people give a lot of advice on this, but I think certainly what you said is exactly spot on. When you go off on your own, you know, it's never going to go in the exact time frame that you want. It's never going to go exactly like you thought it would. And so trying to try out things, or even, you know, just doing it, starting out to see if it's even something you like while you still are employed and don't have to worry about all of those issues.
That's so right.
Huge advice.
That's so right, Belinda, because, you know, we're such a culture of all or nothing, and even our politics are turning into all or nothing. But in the workplace, it's you're either a billion-dollar startup or it doesn't matter. And it's like, well, what about my dad's company that's grown for the last 30 years and given his family and his employees a great place of employment over decades? You know, we forget about that there's all these other ways that are very viable, but the culture doesn't celebrate or talk about that. And so I think letting people let go of the all or nothing approach to everything in their life is really, really powerful and very important for us as friends and colleagues to remind people that there's small steps that add up, and it's not just hit a home run or strike out. There's, you know, a lot that goes in between that.
Absolutely. And I do think you are right. We are becoming a huge society of all or nothing. And it just leads to that whole procrastination, even of getting started with something.
Yeah. Because why should I even try? Because I'm not going to be the next Harry Potter book. So I'm not going to write a book. And it's like, well, there's a lot of other books underneath Harry Potter in terms of bestsellers.
You know? Exactly. Exactly. So are there any exciting things that you're working on or something you would like our listeners to know about? And then, of course, how they can find you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, Belinda, it's been fantastic to be on the show. You know, people can always find me at MrCorpo.com, where I sell my books. I also have the Mr. Corpo podcast, where I talk about things in the workplace, like how do you win an email fight? What do you do if people at work don't like you? How do you ask for a raise? So I've got those episodes available everywhere. And then the exciting thing for me is I'm writing my third and final in the series of the Survival Guides for Corporate America, and it's called How to Quit Your Job. And so that's going to be coming out this fall, but I'm literally writing it for 2 hours a day this spring and summer, and really excited about it. It's not just going to be about how to quit your job. It's going to be about how to find your happiness where you work. And sometimes that doesn't mean quitting your job. That's part of that all or nothing culture. Mm-hmm. And instead it means, hey, talk to your boss and tell him what you'd be interested in. Do you want to change jobs? Do you want to try something different? Do you want to rearrange your work hours? There's a lot of flexibility where you are today that you may not realize And all you have to do is ask. So that's what I'm focused on and really excited about, and just giving people another tool like you're doing with this podcast of how do you find happiness? How do you make the most out of your life? And a big part of that is your work life. So I love what you're doing. It was so fun to talk with you. And also, people can check me out on Instagram at Mr. Corpo is probably the easiest place to see all the fun pictures and things I'm up to.
That is great. So just so our listeners are following along here. So you work corporate from 7 to 5, let's say, every single day. But then you've kind of got a really, really nice side hustle that really helps you express yourself and do things that you enjoy, which is your podcast and writing books. And so it, again, there is, you know, you do both, and it sounds like you do both extremely successfully.
Yeah, thank you, Belinda. I appreciate that compliment. You know, I think for me, the important part of that is it doesn't matter what you do with that time, but it just helps you balance things out. Because then when a coworker makes a comment to you, I don't take it as personally, because I have other things in my life that are interesting that are taking up my brain. But if I'm only going to work, going home, going to work, going to home, when someone at work says something to me, I dwell on it, I get mad about it, and it carries too much weight in my life. So for me, it's about the balance of having things outside of work that help me keep perspective. That's what I think is so important, at least for me in my life and in being successful on both sides of the ledger.
That is great. Well, Justin, it has absolutely been a delight having you as part of our show today, and you gave some really great, insightful nuggets, and I hope that our listeners will go back. I know everybody listens to podcasts usually doing about 3 other things at the same time, and sometimes there's just really, really good ones that are worth going back and listening and taking those gold nuggets away, so I hope that our listeners will take the time to do that, because you gave some really insightful points. And really just showed the other side. You know, so often people think, I got to have my own business. I have to have my own business. But you really can be successful and happy and balanced and everything else doing what you really love.
I love that, Belinda. I had so much fun. Thank you.
Great.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.